Greetings, strange weirdos. My name's Emma, but feel free to just call me your best friend.
Hi, your best friend.
Not you.
Oh, okay. Well, them. Shit. And I put the der in Spider-Man. I am James.
And we're both putting the whore in the whore.
It's true. It's true. You know, Thor is a whore. Fun fact. That is actually a well-known fact.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Uh-huh. And you know what? I say good for Thor. Good for Thor. You go, the whore.
Four for you, Glenn Coco. You go, Glenn Coco.
Yes. Snaps for Glenn Coco and the whore. And Spider-Man. And all of you strange little weirdos listening out there. Guess what?
What?
The time is here and the place is now. And that can only mean one thing. You are listening to that Strange Podcast.
It is. And you are. Join us today for another creepy tale. This week, we are finally leaving California.
Oh.
We finally found a flight, and we're heading gaily forward to good old Texas.
Ooh, Texas.
Yes.
I love Texas.
Who does?
Who does?
Once we get there, we're going to investigate the scandalous and salacious story of two friends, Betty Gore and Candy Montgomery, and a treacherous tryst that will ultimately turn tragic.
Ooh, sounds fun. I love Texas ass, and I definitely love scandal, so let's do that. Later, I'm taking us on a quick detour to Princeton, New Jersey, where a conversation about a stolen brain somehow turned into this.
Shit, 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 shit. Shit, shit. Shit. There. Now I guarantee no one could beat that.
Jeez, the language. Oh my gosh.
You know I keep it dirty. I'm like Christina Aguilera. You know the bitch. I'm her.
Yeah.
I'm dirty.
Yeah, and if you couldn't tell, that dirty was with like 30 R's.
30 dirty R's. That's right.
Who doesn't like that, though? You know, the juicier, the better.
Obviously.
That's what I say.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of juicy dirt.
Yeah?
What do you say we go ahead and get this kiki started officially?
Feet.
You're literally always singing, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure everyone feels that way. I'm sure everyone loves it. Yeah. I don't want to brag, but we all know I have the voice of an angel.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's okay. You know, it's tough, but
it's
beautiful. I do want to thank you. I do want to commend Taylor Swift, though, you know.
For what?
For being so brave and telling us all that she has bare feet. You know, this whole time I assumed she had human feet.
Oh my God, that is so stupid. I love you. Honestly, that is a new level of stupid.
Which, by the way, is how you win the whole thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what do you think? Yeah, should we get started? Do you think?
Oh yeah, I'm ready when you are.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to your favorite little nonsensical podcast covering, you know, anything and everything strange.
Yeah. That is what we do.
Like in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get into our main topic, let's chat. You want to have a chat?
You know, I literally always want to chat.
Well,
so, yeah.
I obviously want to talk about Drag Race.
Okay. So the last episode, the lip sync.
The lip sync, Lollapalooza, SmackDown.
Yeah.
How are we feeling?
Well, first of all, it was a whole lot of fucking lip syncs. Like, I know that's a big part of the show, but, you know, I like to see other things too.
That's fair.
It was good. It was really good. I thought everyone did really well. Even the person who went home did really well. Even the bottom two. Sadly, it's a sad day for Bosco fans.
Yeah, it was rough out here.
But I think everyone did really well. That would be a really, really, really fucking tough challenge.
I almost thought no one was going to go home again.
Yeah, well, I had that thought.
Are we going to see a gold bar?
Yeah.
Everyone did good.
Weren't we all kind of sitting there on the edge of our seats like, does this bitch have the gold bar? I'm not going to say who.
You know my theory.
I know. I do. I think. Go ahead. I think you should talk about your theory. I think it's a good one. What's your theory on the gold bar?
Okay. It's tinfoil hat.
No. Not us.
A whisper of indica inspired this theory.
No way.
Bosco is a type of chocolate. Therefore, they're not going to give Bosco a chocolate bar. Therefore, Bosco has the gold bar.
Yeah.
It's really brave of me to share this theory openly.
Yeah, no, I think you're right on the money. I mean, it has to be that. My theory, it's better than my theory. Mine was that it has to be Diabetti who has the gold bar.
Tell us why.
Okay. Because it's really not cool to give a person who has diabetes a freaking chocolate bar that they can't even eat.
You know, you've got a fair point. Ethically speaking, she has to have the gold bar.
Yeah, what? She's just walking around with chocolate? No.
It's not good for her health.
If it even touches her skin, she will, die on the spot.
And I have to say, this episode fully turned me into a Georges fan.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the party. You're late.
I know. But between last episode's weed runway and the lip sync this episode.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan.
Well, how could you not be?
It's true.
Yeah. Well, geez. We really can't waste too much time because someone decided to write a thesis for an episode.
Okay,
master's, doctoral.
Okay, when you hear about this case, yeah, you'll understand why.
No, I'm just messing with you. You know, I like to yank your chain. People still say that?
No, no one says that.
Yeah, well, whatever creams you, Twinkie. You just choked on your coffee. I am so sorry.
I literally did.
Don't die. Okay. Anything else? Anything else? Happy spring.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Happy spring.
My least favorite time of the year.
My favorite time of the year. You're crazy. Spring is amazing.
No, because now the days get longer and there's less darkness and it makes me sad.
Well, I actually love daylight savings time, so.
Boo, you whore.
Yeah. We're just going to have to A to D on that one because no way.
Yeah.
Give me the sun.
No. And on that note, we'll be right back with our juicy, dark, twisted tale in just a mo.
So, are we ready to get into your novel?
Okay, let's not think of it as a novel. I am bringing you a full-on soap opera this week.
I love soaps.
We're thinking Dynasty, General Hospital, Days of Our Lives.
Passions,
yes. Are you ready?
I'm so ready. I really am.
Okay, picture it.
Yeah.
It's a town called Lucas, Texas.
Okay, sounds quaint, we'll say.
It's all right. Mm. It's just outside of Dallas.
Is it anywhere close to Mesquite? Mesquite, Texas. That's the only part. That's all I know.
It's the only reference we have.
Yeah, I don't.
So it's 1979, mm-hmm, and it's a very small town. Wealthy executives are moving there. We're talking literally flocking to this little town to avoid the hustle and bustle that Dallas brings.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Miss Betty Pomeroy Gore.
Pomeroy.
Pomeroy.
I'm Anne Pomeroy.
Thank you, Sarah Silverman.
Or is it Jane Pomeroy? Did we ever decide?
It is both.
Oh, it's both.
Yes. Now, Betty Pomeroy Gore, who's 29 at the time of our story, grew up very popular in a small town in Kansas. She was involved in music, school plays, and even student council.
Ooh, do you remember student council? Ugh.
Nope.
You never did student council?
Hell no.
Oh, you're lucky.
I avoided that shit like the plague.
That was the smart thing to do. I wish I would have. But yeah, no.
You were a nerd.
Yeah, it was like school class treasure or something. I don't know. I don't even remember.
That's adorable.
Yeah.
I love that journey for you.
At least someone has to.
So Betty met her husband, Alan, in college, and they got married in 1970.
Cute.
Very cute. Betty was an elementary school teacher up until she had her first child. And after that, she kind of struggled with postpartum depression. So we're getting less cute.
Yeah.
And now, it was the 70s, and people didn't know much about that shit then. And her doctor was literally like, I don't know, go take this Valium, go home, chill.
So nothing's changed, really.
Right.
No. I'm kidding.
And
obviously.
But you're not wrong. After Alan and Betty had their second child, Betty withdrew even more and got like more introverted and more kind of depressed.
Okay. And that was like the postpartum depression?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Alan, Betty's husband, who is 30 at the time of our story.
Okay, so they're a year apart?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't described as handsome or unattractive. Apparently, most people would use the word average to describe him.
Okay, okay.
Sure. Yeah.
That's not very nice. I mean,
I'm just giving you the notes.
No,
here,
I mean, okay? people call it like they see it. I appreciate that, but like.
It's the word of mouth in the town. Alan.
It's that average guy, Alan.
it's that very average Alan.
Oh, average Alan.
He was introverted and described as reserved, code for boring.
Rude.
Alan worked in telecommunications.
Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. Think like what today would be what? Like cell phones and satellites and shit like that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like any like broad umbrella of things he could be doing. Yeah.
And if you can't tell, at this point, we're introducing our cast of characters.
Oh, I love it.
Now we get to Candy Wheeler Montgomery.
Ugh. I've heard of this Candy.
Candy is 28 at the time of our story. And Candy's often described as a prima donna.
Okay. So Candy isn't sweet?
Get the fuck out. No.
No?
No.
No?
No. Apparently Candy knew what she wanted and she was going to do whatever it took to get it.
Okay. Yeah.
And she wasn't just like that as an adult. She was like that for her entire life, and that reputation followed her.
Okay, so born and raised, born and bred.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Candy's friends described her as an independent spirit.
Okay.
And, she dated a lot, but no men met her standard.
Okay. Little Miss better than everyone else.
Yes.
Okay, okay. Yes. Yeah, you're definitely getting know the type.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like her firm rule when she dated was that whoever she would have to marry, they had to be wealthy.
Oh. Like, I guess that's not a bad idea.
No, she had a firm idea in mind. So when Candy met Pat Montgomery, who's 30 at the time of our story.
Okay.
She wasn't, shall we say, thrilled?
Really?
Yeah. According to Candy, he's too introverted and he's not very handsome.
But did he have money?
Mm.
I was going to say, isn't that her most important criteria?
She, according to Candy, she knew he would be wealthy someday.
Oh, so wealth. Yeah, that is a part of it.
So she's like, yep, let's do this.
I knew it.
When Pat proposed to Candy, she accepted because she's like, hey, you're as close to what I want as I'm going to get soon.
So she settled for him because he was going to be rich?
Very that.
That's kind of weird. Usually, I don't know.
That girl you knew she was.
Yeah, but definitely. It's not the typical story. It's interesting. It's not going the direction I was expecting it to.
Now, Pat worked at a place you know well.
Yeah.
Texas Instruments.
Oh, God. Oh my God, my dad, if he were here right now, he would be on such a tangent.
Such a tangent. It's charming.
It is so charming. Every time you mention anything about, you know, a job or being young, it's just immediately like, did I ever tell you about the time I worked at Texas Instruments? He doesn't have that accent.
I don't know where that came from.
No, I don't either. But yeah. Okay, I love Texas Instruments.
So yeah, Pat was working at Texas Instruments, and he was earning a considerable income.
Oh, yeah, well,
So it seems Candy was right. And to anyone you would ask, Candy Montgomery had the perfect life. Okay. But if you ask her,
yeah,
she was bored.
Yeah.
And Candy wanted more.
Well, of course she did, didn't she?
You okay, so already know.
Never enough.
Now,
Little Miss can't be impressed.
Exactly.
What's the song? Little Miss can't be wrong. Oh, okay.
James is always taking you on a musical journey.
I really don't mean to sing so much. This is just a peek into our normal lives.
If you had any idea.
Oh, it's much worse in real life.
Now, the Gores and the Montgomerys both attended the First United Methodist Church of Lucas.
Okay.
And it was through their church that they met each other. Barf to that hobby. Like, I can think of so many better ways to spend my time.
Oh, yeah. At least 10 right off the top of my head. You could go skiing. You could go bowling. You could ride a book. You could ride a bike. You could go on a jog. I lost track.
Hell, you could get a root canal.
You get a root canal. That is much better.
But anyway, Candy was like uber involved in the church. Like, she's up in the choir. She's teaching the little, what do they call it? Sunday school.
Children?
Yeah, the little gremlin things.
Yeah, they're called children.
Yeah, those. She's teaching those things in the Sunday school.
Okay.
And one day, in a church volleyball game, we're going to rewind a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's summer of 1978.
Yeah.
Candy and Alan bump into each other. And we're talking quite literally. They collide while playing the game.
Okay.
Rom-com stupid shit.
Yeah, okay. I didn't think that kind of shit really happened in life.
Same. And I'm researching the story, and I'm like, okay.
Although that is how we met.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. You remember?
No.
You don't remember the volleyball tournament? It was for the trophy. The whole town was in. It was a fun time. I can't believe you don't remember it.
It's the brain injury.
In the
classic
LSD.
Rom-com. Yeah.
I just hit my mic. I was laughing so hard. Thinking of you tripping on LSD, it just makes me laugh so hard.
No.
No one needs that.
No. God, no.
Same for me. I would never. Ugh.
Couldn't do it. Couldn't be me.
How did I get us on this train of LSD?
The 70s.
Oh.
You think of the 70s. You know.
I thought it was the 80s.
Well,
Oh, that's right.
Words are hard.
We went back in time.
Yes.
Oh.
So they collide while playing volleyball. And you know, no one notices this, according to Candy. But she noticed it. And she thinks to herself, wow, Alan smells sexy. Yeah.
Okay. Weird, but...
Right.
Who am I to judge? Okay.
Okay, Candy's been through a lot. Bear with her.
She has a bear with her? Where? Somebody help her now. So stupid.
Now, after Candy notices Alan's sexy aroma.
Mm, yeah, that pungent smell.
Volleyball sweat.
Ooh, yeah. Who doesn't love that?
She's like, oh, Alan's a lot like me. He's active in the church. We both sing in the choir. We both love our children. I mean, I hope so to that one.
Well, yeah, that's a no-brainer, I would hope.
Right. And she's like, oh, we're both the outgoing, personable half of a mismatched couple. I don't know what that voice is.
I got a little bit Blanche Devereaux, but also, you know.
I always get a little bit Blanche Devereaux.
Yeah, that's true.
But even more so, there was a tiny voice in Candy's brain that was like, Alan wants to sleep with me as much as I want to sleep with him. I just know it.
Okay. Well, that's a powerful thought.
You just wait.
Yeah, I'm scared.
So now, in Candy's mind, they had already begun an affair, and it started with little things. Alan seemed to joke with Candy more than he joked with the other women at the church. He would tease Candy about being bad at volleyball, and he'd even wink at her like they shared a secret that no one else knew.
Don't you love how teasing is... Amongst the straight cishet people, teasing is somehow considered like a sign that you're into someone.
Like, preach. It's so toxic.
I know. Does no one see that?
Ugh. Like, kindness is sexy. I mean, don't tease a bitch.
No, I mean, who doesn't love teasing? But there's a fine line there.
Not
between.
In the way the straights are.
I'm sure not in the way that she was saying. In the 70s?
Preach. Ooh. So, Candy said that she and Alan had even taken to chatting a little longer than people tended to normally when they were getting in their cars after church. Like, their flirting remained subtle.
Okay. So they weren't, like, in everyone's faces about it. Right. Obviously, it was very discreet.
Like,
illicit affair.
Right. So much so, in fact, like, Candy would be like, is he just being friendly with me? Am I imagining this? And, like, it gets to a point where finally, one night after choir practice, Candy's, like, looking around the parking lot, and she spots Alan. He's near his car. And she just walks up to the passenger side of the car and opens the door and leans in. And she's like, Alan, I want to talk to you sometime about something that's been bothering me.
Very matter of fact.
Yes.
Okay.
And he's like, okay, well, shit, how about right now?
Yeah, let's shoot the shit. What's up?
Right.
That's how I'm picturing it.
And she's like, I've been thinking about you a lot, and it's really bothering me, and I don't know whether I want you to do anything about it or not. I'm very attracted to you, and I'm tired of thinking about it, and so I wanted to tell you. Like, Candy said her piece and bitch just got out of the car.
Well, respect.
So.
Like a Band-Aid. You right. Know, rip just, it off.
She's done and out. Mm-hmm. And it's like a week or so later, after their little choir practice, Alan sees Candy again. And Alan and Candy conveniently stay late to clean up the gymnasium. It's innocent, guys. I assure you. Now, they're walking to the parking lot together, and when they reach the car, Alan gives her an answer finally. He's like, what do you have in mind?
Category is coy.
Oh, yes.
Realness.
All the way around.
Coy couture, darling.
But one person who's not being coy is Candy. Because she just straight up says, would you be interested in having an affair?
What? Oh, that's so romantic.
Woo me right on the spot.
Yeah. Like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction. Like, but way more in your face, which makes it way more scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm scared.
Now, Alan didn't answer right away. So that's where I'm going to leave that hanging.
Oh. Well, yeah. You know, honestly, if I put myself in his shoes, how do you answer that?
Exactly. Oh, well, exactly.
Just kind of like, no. But wasn't in my plan?
None for me. Thanks. Yeah.
Pass? Awkward.
So, Betty and Alan, we get back to them. They had been rocky, so much so that they're debating attending marriage counseling through their church.
Oh.
And they're like, we need to get through this postpartum shit, and like, we're trying to have a third kid. It's putting a lot of strain on our marriage.
Yeah. Tale as old as time.
Yes, for the straights.
Well, yeah, obviously. Goes without saying. No offense to all you straight cisheads. I'm sorry. I don't understand you.
Never will.
No, but I appreciate you. Mostly.
There was tension whenever Alan brought up the subject of having another kid. And Betty would say, why do we need that? I have so much to do already, you know?
Yeah.
And then he would bring up marriage counseling. And she's like, why do we need that?
Yeah.
Well, you don't think there's something wrong with us, do you?
It certainly sounds like he does.
And Alan knew she'd be upset if he said yes. So he always dropped the subject.
Oh.
So they're fighting over major life events.
Yeah.
Constantly.
That's toxic.
Right. Now I'm just thinking Britney Spears. Toxic.
I know. I was about to start singing it, but I won't. I won't.
So cut to a few weeks later, Alan and Candy, they're meeting in an auto repair shop in McKinney, Texas.
What a romantic spot to meet up.
Oh, yeah.
Mm.
Don't you love auto repair shops for your meetups?
Oh, absolutely. I prefer it. it warms my heart.
So now, this auto repair shop was just a few miles north of Candy's house.
Ah, convenient.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense.
And Alan surprised Candy with a birthday card, which was addressed to, and I think you'll appreciate this, the last of the Red Hot Lovers.
What?
And he even had a small package of Red Hots inside.
No, he did not.
He did.
No.
Yes.
Get out of... No.
Yes.
Oh, my God. Get off this planet with that.
Oh. What a shit. And now, they drove from the auto repair shop to a tea house.
Oh, okay. Now, that is better than an auto repair shop.
And I had you worried for a second.
Well, I'm worried this whole time. Still worried.
You should be. Now, Candy and Alan talked about everything except themselves for hours. Alan talked about Betty. Candy talked about Pat. They talked about their children, church shit. Candy got Alan to talk about his work, and she talked about her creative writing. And after a while, Alan's even like, I've never done anything like an affair before. So they're like opening up to each other in this weirdly intimate way.
Okay. Sure. I mean.
Now, the next month consisted of them kind of strategizing for what. While I'm doing the research, I would have to say is, to give them props, the most thoroughly planned, well-thought-out affair in the history of romance. Their whole affair began with dinners and phone calls, and soon after, lunch was added to their itinerary.
Okay, very fancy affair.
Fancy, fancy.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, Alan found all of it easy to do. And then he could go home to Betty like everything was normal.
I never understand that.
Right. And the same was true for Candy with Pat.
Wow. A lot of people, you know, as we see, there wouldn't be a Maury show. Is that still on, by the way?
You know, I just saw a thing that it's ending after 30 seasons.
That's for the best.
Yeah. Trash TV at its finest.
We're a trash podcast at our finest.
Yay. Yay for trash.
Yes.
Speaking of trash, Alan and Candy go on like this for a few months before Candy plans this ridiculously elaborate picnic with marinated chicken, salad, white wine, and cheesecake. The bitch even packed a tablecloth. Oh. And I'm over here like, what the fuck? Who even picnics?
I know, but she's Martha Stewart over here. Right.
And I guess, like, whatever. It was the 70s. I guess I have to let it slide.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's how I picnic.
I guess.
I would take all of that. Basket, a cloth, nice set of candles.
I guess it's the only way to picnic.
Yeah, you go to your local florist, have them cut you a nice set of orchids, and you really set the tone.
Have an ambiance.
It's all about the ambiance, darling.
Speaking of ambiance.
Yeah.
Oh, Candy even packed a few undergarments.
Ooh, some sexy pajamas and such.
Yeah, yeah. And nightgowns. Because she and Alan are also getting a motel room. That's right. They've decided to finally go through with it.
I'm not surprised.
Were you surprised, though?
No.
And you just said that.
Exactly.
So Candy checks into the motel room under her real name because she's a fucking amateur.
I was going to say that. I mean, that. What the fuck?
Pro tip. Never check into the hotel room under your real name. Like, personally, no. I always use the name Shebecca Beaverhausen because I love a good alias. What about you?
Oh, I always go for Owen Cockburn.
Love that. That's my go-to. So much. Like, guys, I'm just telling you. Don't use your real name.
No.
Rookie mistake.
It is a rookie mistake. And you're going to look back and you're going to think, whoa. I mean, if you're doing this, you're going to look back and think, what the hell was I thinking anyway?
Honestly, if you're getting a hotel room for any reason, don't put your real name down.
For any reason?
Exactly.
Is that why we were under Beaverhausen the last time we were at the motel?
It was.
It was a Motel 6.
Okay.
I don't think it really mattered.
I don't need certain individuals able to find me.
Okay. Well,
And I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Hey, that's your business.
So for months, like into 1979, like the full next year, Candy and Alan just, they just kept boning.
Nonstop boning.
Yeah. Okay. Like literally every other week.
Okay.
And gasp, they were catching feelings.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that thing they said they weren't going to do.
Yeah.
And now, this made them both feel a little guilty.
Finally?
Yeah, but they didn't stop.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. No.
I got my hopes up for a quick second. No,
they didn't stop.
I don't know why I thought they would. They never do.
They never do. The affair was, at this point, all that Candy could think about. She got so swept away that she even confided in a few of her friends about the affair. But she was cautious and didn't mention Alan by name.
Okay.
She was smart about that one. So by
using a real name at a hotel.
I know.
I'm still upset at that.
As you should be. So by July of 1979, Alan actually stood Candy up for one of their meetings.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Scandalous.
Shit's getting juicy.
It really is.
Now, he did this because he and Betty were going to Kansas to see Betty's family with their new baby, Bethany.
Oh.
Yeah, now, here's the shady part.
Uh-huh.
He didn't directly tell Candy why he wasn't coming when he called. He was just like, hey, can't make it.
That just like, wow. So yeah. Completely copped out.
Like typical dude, just like,
yeah.
Hey, sorry, can't come.
Oh, bro, I can't make it.
Yeah, you know, no, literally. So during this family trip, Betty, how do I say this and remain socially responsible?
Uh-oh.
Makes a move on Alan.
Okay. And you worried me there.
No, I just don't want to be too graphic. But he turns her down. And she gets really upset. So he's feeling guilty. And he calls Candy up to end their affair.
Oh.
He's finally like, I just can't do it anymore.
Yes. It's weighing me down too much, don't you see?
Well, I should say he calls her to think about ending their affair, not to actually end it.
What?
They kept their phone calls up for weeks after this incident.
Okay, so he was like, theoretically, we're gonna quit, but like, in reality, we're totally gonna keep going.
I just can't quit you.
Jack Twist. More like Jack Nasty.
Very that, but with straight people this time. It's time for the straights to get some representation.
Okay? Oh, yeah, geez. Oh, they need it so badly.
So, Alan gets a new job.
Okay.
And he tells Candy, like, you know, I'm not going to be able to see you as much. And naturally, Candy's very upset by this. In her mind, this is the end of everything. So, she asked Alan to meet her one more time at their hotel. He did. They hooked up. And it was apparently quick and unsatisfying on both ends.
I've heard that one before.
You can't burn yourself. So Betty and Alan were going to marriage counseling now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he finally persuaded Betty. And they're working on communication and feelings. Sounds awful.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and nope out on that one.
My two least favorite things.
Yeah.
So even though I think it sounds like a load of old shit, it seemed to work for Betty and Alan.
Really?
They started to feel closer, and Alan wanted to concentrate all of his thoughts and feelings on his marriage.
Okay, well, in theory, you know, that's a good thing.
Right. Like,
I like this.
Props, you know, to Betty and Alan.
Yeah.
Like working your shit out.
Right. Owning their shit, working through it. That's not easy stuff.
No.
So.
Especially with all of this baggage.
Right. Especially during this time period. So good for them.
Right.
Yeah.
More power to you.
Sure.
So now, despite that, good old Alan meets Candy for another picnic lunch.
Okay. Well, and we're immediately back. It's like you just popped the car into reverse on yeah. The highway, I feel.
We're going to do that a lot.
Okay, thank you.
So,
and now I have whiplash.
Yep, keep that feeling.
I'm going to sue your ass. You know that, right?
You'll need a good lawyer.
I have one.
Oh, damn.
On retainer.
Is it the cat?
It is the cat. Damn it.
So now, at this picnic, Alan told Candy all about the marriage counseling and its benefits. And he made the strongest arguments he could for breaking up. But he didn't actually say, like, let's break up.
They never do.
They never do. So Candy's like, great, I'm going to have to break up. Great.
Yeah, now I got to be the one. I didn't want to be the one, but someone's got
to
be the one.
And she's like, Alan, you seem to be leaving it up to me. So I've decided I won't call you. I won't try to see you. I won't bother you anymore.
Okay. She's like, I'm going to take my wet ass pussy and find someone new.
Exactly.
You think I'm irreplaceable? You must not know about me.
Exactly. She is taking her beautiful self elsewhere. And so at this point,
good for her.
It's over between them. And in Candy's mind, it hadn't been thrilling for a while. And she's like, I'm just going to go find a new paramour and reignite my spark.
Oh, great word. I love it. That's one of my favorite. Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you, too.
Yes. I loved that.
Paramour is one of my favorite words. Anyway.
So even though they weren't continuing their affair, mm-hmm. the Gore and Montgomery families were still very close.
Scandalous.
Yes. They were so close that Alan and Betty's daughter, Elisa, wanted to spend the night with the Montgomery kids.
What?
Yeah, they were friends.
Okay.
So
it's kind of that's kind of weird, though, right?
Whatever.
Okay.
So they were going to the drive-in theater to see Star Wars.
Ooh, good choice.
It was The Empire Strikes Back.
Ooh,
yeah. Great choice.
Great choice.
So Candy attempted to call Betty a couple times to ask about Elisa staying an extra night, and she wouldn't answer. So Candy's like, "I'm just gonna stop by." Talk to Betty, make sure it's okay that Elisa stays again.
Yeah.
And Alan had just left town on a business trip to St. Paul hours before Betty goes to the Gore house.
Okay.
Like, just missed her.
Wow. What are the odds?
Yeah. And he goes on this trip even though Betty had objected immensely. A few hours after he arrived at his work destination, he tried to call Betty, but he couldn't get an answer. So over the next few hours, he kept trying to call, but he kept getting no answer. And then Alan calls Candy, who told him Elisa's staying the night with her.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, sounds chill, but I still haven't heard from Betty.
Where's Betty?
So Alan called the neighbors to check on Betty, but they reported back that everything seemed normal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the house is fine. Everything looks fine. But as the afternoon is moving into the evening, Alan's kind of like, well, can you fucking check again? I can't get in contact with my wife and she's home alone with my baby daughter. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, kind of a big deal.
Right.
Yeah, right. Get back to me. It's important.
So, hey,
thanks.
Having some common decency, one neighbor, Richard Parker.
Love the name.
Yeah, not to be confused with the tiger from Life of Pi.
No, that's exactly what I thought of.
I knew it. He returned to Alan and Betty's home with two other men. Now, they tried the front door and they found that it was unlocked.
Okay.
Which is kind of weird.
That is, yeah, I know it was like, you know. Early 80s, right?
Yeah, 1980. Yeah.
So, could go either way, but still kind of, it's ominous.
It's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when they got in the house, they could hear the baby crying.
Oh, now that is ominous.
Yeah, and they found her in her room with a dirty diaper, and she was clearly dehydrated.
Oh, no, poor baby.
Yeah, so obviously this is a sign something is wrong.
Yeah.
And don't worry, that's all that happened to the baby. She's fine.
Oh, thank God.
Not going to leave you hanging on that one.
Woo!
But through their search of the house, they spot a door standing partially open.
Okay.
And through that door, they see Betty Gore. And she was soaked in blood. And her face was so disfigured that she was barely identifiable.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah. And now it's kind of obvious that Betty Gore had been murdered.
Okay.
In fact, she had been struck 41 times with an axe.
41 times?
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, no. Yeah, she would be unrecognizable. That's horrifying.
Specifically?
Yeah.
28 of those blows were to her head and face.
Oh, my God. Wow, 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 wow.
Now, at the same time, Candy Montgomery was mindlessly driving her car down the main street in Lucas. And she was trying to imagine that her car wasn't moving at all. she was staring at a stop sign. The stop sign kind of scared her because she needed the car to be moving.
What?
The toe on Candy's left foot was bleeding profusely. Candy stared at it and kind of told herself, one step at a time. Just do one thing at a time and it will be all right.
Sounds like she is in a state of shock and shock.
Yeah.
Just double shock.
There's more.
Okay.
Candy, she kind of glances down at her lap and she feels a chill.
Yeah.
Her jeans were soaked with water and she could smell fabric softener.
Okay.
And she's like, why am I wet? What is that smell?
Is she having a breakdown?
Stay tuned. You know, and she's thinking to herself, I can't panic. Why won't the car go faster? She could also feel her toe throbbing. And she's thinking, I cut my toe on the storm door. That's what happened. How can I be wet? Oh, God, it hurts. No one will know. You couldn't have done it. No one will know.
No one will know?
No one will know.
What will no one know?
Like I said, stay tuned. We're taking a journey here.
What will no one know?
So Candy's white station wagon just continues winding through all of these back roads, and it disappears into a forest of oak trees, which is close to where she lives. And Candy keeps driving until the landscape gets familiar again, and she reaches her house in the woods. And she thinks to herself, nothing has changed. Out of these clothes, calm, dry, and clean, normal. She runs upstairs, stripping out of her clothes, and she enters her and Pat's bedroom. She tries wiping the blood from her toe, and she applies a Band-Aid. But she's kind of surprised at how deep the cut on her toe is.
Okay.
And again, she kind of reminds herself, I did it on the storm door. We never fixed the storm door. Now, Candy takes her shirt into the kitchen, and she places it into the sink. She pours detergent in and she turns on the water to soak the shirt. And she's hit with that same smell again.
Of the fabric softener?
Yes.
Okay.
Candy starts to feel like she's going to vomit, but she kind of quickly pulls herself together and reorients.
Okay.
And after leaving the shirt to soak, Candy returns to her bedroom to find a pair of jeans similar in hue to the one she had taken off and to take a shower. Now, while in the shower, she noticed an open cut at her hairline on the right side of her forehead. And her hair kept a Band-Aid from sticking to it, though. So she returns to the kitchen to wring out her shirt and throw it in the dryer. And she puts on the jeans that look remarkably like the one she had to take off. She's waiting for her shirt to dry, thinking, thank goodness it was a burgundy shirt.
Why would it be? Okay, what? I'm lost.
We're going on a journey, baby. So the last thing Miss Candy did was replace her sandals with a pair of blue tennis shoes. She laces them up tightly to keep pressure on the bandage on her toe. Now, she's ready to pick up her children and Betty Gore's daughter, Elisa, at church. The puppet show the children were watching at the church was coming to a close.
Oh, a puppet show. Yeah,
everybody loves puppets.
Everybody does love puppets. I love puppets.
Oh. So, Candy's waiting for this puppet show to get out. So, she's like, I'm just going to catch up with an old friend in a parking lot.
Okay.
And she's like, oh, Barbara, I went down to Betty's and we just got to talking. Then I looked at my watch and I thought I had time to go to Target and get Father's Day cards. And I drove all the way down to Plano. But then when I got there, I realized my watch had stopped and I was late, so I didn't even go in. We're taking Elisa with us tonight to see The Empire Strikes Back. That reminds me, I'd better go check on the kids. Candy then heads for an empty classroom, you know, to check on the kids.
Uh-huh.
But it crosses her mind that she might be limping. So she puts an extra effort to walk straight.
What is going on?
Going on a journey. So she finds an empty room, and it had a mirror in it. So she's dabbing at the cut on her hairline. Now, even though the blood had dried, she could feel it still running down her forehead slightly, like it was exposing her. And she's thinking to herself, no one must know. It is a day like any other. However, when Candy left the church, one of the women at the church noticed something odd. Candy Montgomery, who always wore sandals in the summer, was wearing a pair of blue tennis shoes. And it was, frankly, completely out of character. The afternoon kind of passed in a fog for Candy.
To say the least. I feel like I am Candy right now.
Good.
I love it.
Good. She phones her husband, Pat, who's at work.
Yeah.
And she says, Pat, we just got home from Bible school and wanted to be sure you get enough money at the bank because Elisa is going to the movie with us. The kids nagged about it after you left this morning, and so I promised them I'd ask Betty if Elisa could stay another night. But then I had to go to Betty's to pick up Elisa's swimsuit, and we got to talking, and I lost track of time. And then when I went to Target, I noticed my watch had stopped, and I missed the whole Bible school program.
That just happened to me the other day. Ain't that a bitch?
True.
It happens.
She wasn't done there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Strap in.
So, I should have figured this lady's nuts.
Pat, would you happen to know where Alan is working today? And Pat responds, Alan Gore? No, why? And Candy's like, well, it's not important. We'll just meet you in the parking lot about 15 of 5. And first off, 15 of 5? Who says that?
Right, and it's like, does that mean 5:15 or 4:45 or... something
Thank
else.
You. I wondered the exact same thing when I was going through this.
Call me young, call me dumb.
Illiterate, I don't know. So, and Pat, like us, hung up and was very much, what the fuck was that all about?
Yeah, as I think most people might.
So, on this journey I'm taking you on, we're now going back to Alan.
Okay.
He was waiting to hear from the neighbors that had checked on Betty. Mm-hmm. He gets a call from one of the neighbors that went with Richard Parker telling him, hey, I'm afraid it's not good, but the little one's okay.
What?
Yeah. So Alan's like, what about Betty?
Yeah.
And the neighbor can only respond, I'm sorry, Alan. To say the least... Alan is stunned and disoriented. And not knowing what else he could do, he called the most comforting person he knew, Candy Montgomery. Alan says, Candy, I have some bad news. Betty is dead. Now, Candy calmly asks, what happened? Alan just explains, it looks like she's been shot. The neighbors found her. I know that some things have been bothering her lately, and I know she's been upset, but I never thought that she would.
So he immediately went to that?
Yes.
Or was this Candy?
That was Alan.
Okay, so Alan was immediately assuming that Betty committed suicide?
Correct.
That's kind of weird.
And now, at this point, Candy could barely speak because she is... crying. And she's like, what can I say, Alan? And he's like, please keep Elisa for a while and don't tell her what happened. So Candy hangs up the phone.
Yeah.
And Pat asks her if Betty is dead. And Candy responds with, I don't know. I didn't ask.
But what?
And now Candy thinks to herself, a gun, a suicide. It's all right now because it happened with a gun.
Why is it all right? What?
The phone calls started pouring in the next morning. Candy, have you heard about Betty? It's all over the news. But the next phone call was different. The police just left. They say she was murdered with an axe. That dread descended over Candy again. An axe? They say it must have been some very sick person. Now, when Alan finally got home from his trip, he was then told that Betty had been killed with an axe. And he almost collapsed. Candy felt like she should avoid talking to Alan.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah, because Candy, by her own report, was the last person to see Betty alive. So, in a matter of weeks, she became the main suspect in the case.
Oh, that makes sense.
The police questioned her several times, but her version of the day's events and her relationships with the Gores was always airtight.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Or so it seemed, until Alan Gore admitted that he had ended an affair with Candy only 7 months earlier. Mm. Now, this obviously gave the police a motive for Betty's murder, which before they had been unable to, I guess, fathom when questioning Candy. So, thusly, they arrested Candy Montgomery and charged her with murder on June 27th, 1980. For quite a while, Candy denied the charges. Now, once she was released on bail, Candy stopped reading all newspapers and watching all of the news.
Yeah, I bet. I can imagine some of the headlines they might run.
Yeah, they were not kind to Candy.
I can't imagine they were.
But shockingly, people in their church were standing by them, sending greeting cards, even if they were very awkwardly worded thinking of you cards.
Okay, you know, I appreciate that. A person's still a person, I guess, you know.
And Candy did take the time to write replies to every single one. Oh, so like,
that's more than I could do. I can't.
No, like, I always forget. I respect that.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So Candy hired a lawyer from her church named Don Crowder to represent her. Now, the problem with Donnie, however,
there's always a problem with anyone named Donnie, Don, Donald. There's something wrong with
facts. And this isn't any different. Now, the problem with Donnie was that he'd never even, shall we say, been close to a murder trial. He was a personal injury lawyer.
I was going to ask you what kind of lawyer a church had.
Yeah.
Especially in 1980. Like, I imagine today churches have crazy, you know, like corporate lawyers and stuff. But I was going to ask you, like, what kind of lawyer would a church have? So that makes more sense, actually. Like,
have you ever been a victim?
Right? His face is on the benches.
Yeah. Fair that.
Yeah.
So now, as soon as Don began to dive into Candy's case, he realized that he basically would need to pry the memories related to what happened out of Candy's noggin.
Okay.
So he enlists the help of a Houston psychiatrist, Dr. Fred Faison.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Now, Dr. Fred was, shall we say, reluctant to take on the case.
I would be.
But once he met with Candy, he was hooked.
Just why?
The drama, the intrigue, the scandal, the same reason I was hooked when I started the research.
When you put it like that, I actually totally get it.
Wait, this shit is an episode of Dynasty.
Yeah, it really is.
I can't fucking blame him.
No.
But he realized he would need to use hypnosis to get the truth out of Candy, though.
Cue the largest eye roll you've ever seen.
Once Candy was under hypnosis, things got interesting. Dr. Fred started with a simple question. And it was, "What are you feeling, Candy?" And her answer was, "Hate. I hate her."
Who, Candy?
Exactly.
Right?
And Dr. Fred responded, "You hate her?" Candy.
Yeah.
"I hate her. She's messed up my whole life. I hate her. I hate her."
Huh.
So from three hypnosis sessions, the full story of what happened to Betty Gore on Friday, June 13th, 1980, because yes, it was a Friday the 13th.
Ironic.
It had emerged.
Okay.
You ready to get into it?
Oh, I have never been more ready for anything.
Let me hit you with it. Betty wasn't expecting Candy to show up until noon. So when Candy showed up bright and early and knocked on the door, Betty looked annoyed.
Yeah.
She had just sat down to relax for the first time that day after putting baby Bethany in her crib for her nap. Betty had probably rushed to answer the door so the knocking wouldn't wake the baby. Betty held a half-finished cup of coffee when she answered the door, and the Phil Donahue Show was playing in the background.
Okay.
Dated-ass reference.
Yeah, I was going to say, what's that? Only an old person would know what that is.
Right.
I certainly have never heard of it.
Never.
No.
Since Betty wasn't going to go out that day, she was dressed comfortably. Red denim shorts, a yellow short-sleeve pullover, and sandals. Sounds cute.
Yeah, you call it comfortable. I call it fashion. Right. That's how I rock a look.
Right. It
just
sounds cute as
sandals. Yeah.
So she opened the front door halfway and peered out. Mm-hmm. Same. I trust no one.
Yeah.
So when she opens the door and peers out, Candy's there. And Candy's like, "Betty, I have a special favor to ask you." Now, Candy's not an overly polite person, but no one really seemed to mind how abrupt she was. And Candy's like, "The girls wanted Elisa to go see the movie with us tonight. And I told them that if it's okay with you, it's okay with me. And I'll be happy to take Elisa to her swimming lessons to save you the extra trip." And Betty's like, "That's okay. Come in."
Oh, well, that's hospitable.
Right.
Yeah.
We're off to a good start.
Yeah, everything sounds pretty chill.
Now, Candy is like, "Oh, hey, I thought it would be cool. So I just ran down from Bible school to get Elisa's swimsuit." So the two women walk into Betty's living room. Betty switched off the television and offered Candy coffee, which Candy turned down.
Rude.
Never turned down coffee.
I have this thing, like, if anyone offers me anything, I feel bad turning it down.
Same. It's like, just be nice and say yes.
Unless it's drugs, and then I always say no.
Well, we differ on that. So Candy sat next to the sewing machine where she noticed that Betty was making something out of yellow cloth. Betty came back and sat on the other side of the small table. Betty seemed tense, like she was just kind of waiting for Candy to leave.
Yeah.
And Candy tried to make conversation and asked where baby Bethany was. And Betty was tense and kind of just said, "Bethany got up very early today and she just went back to bed."
Okay.
Candy's kind of bummed and, "Oh no, I wanted to play with her."
Yeah.
And this seemed to soften Betty up. And Betty was like, "Candy, if you're going to take Elisa to her swimming lesson, remember that she doesn't like to put her face underwater. So when she does, be sure to give her peppermints afterward. That's the reward we use."
Oh, so what Betty's, a great reward.
Right, stingy bitch.
Yeah, really. Like, can I get a Brock's caramel up in here?
Can I get a fiver?
Yeah, something. a fiver. You're like, give me cold hard cash, bitch.
So, but Betty's loosening up a little. Like, she's making small talk. It's a welcome interruption to her morning routine. The two women are chatting for a while, and then Candy glances at her watch and's like, it's getting late. I have some errands to run. You want to give me the bathing suit so I can leave? Weirdly, Betty didn't move from her chair. Mm. Her face was almost blank. Oh. Her eyes were kind of unfocused. She's just like, Candy, in this calm voice. Are you having an affair with Alan?
Oh, I don't like the way this is going. This makes me think of season two of Euphoria, Martha Kelly's character, drug dealer, who's just like super calm and looks really nice, but like she's probably going to cut you up into 20 pieces or more.
Oh, hold that thought.
Oh, no.
So Candy, like us, mm-hmm. is gooped, gagged, and bewildered as to how Betty knew. And she's like, no, of course not. But maybe she said it just a little too quickly.
Oh, like, oh, no, no, what? No, of course not.
Right. And Betty knew better. And she's like, but you did, didn't you?
Oh, no.
And Candy's kind of quiet now. And she's like, yeah, but it was a long time ago. And she's kind of wondering, did Alan tell you? So Betty says, wait a minute. And she gets up from her chair quite quickly, and she walks through an open door to the utility room and out of sight. Uh-huh. And Candy's just sitting there, and she can't help but wonder how recently Betty had found out.
Yeah, and how?
But before she even has time to process this, Betty reappeared in the doorway. And her face was extremely tense.
You would, I can imagine. Yeah.
And she was clutching the curved wooden handle of a 3-foot axe. Betty was holding,
okay.
And her stance, oddly enough, wasn't very threatening.
Okay. Yeah. So because, she's just casually holding an axe, which is somehow worse.
I wouldn't say casually.
Okay.
She held it kind of clumsily.
Oh.
Like away from her body with the blade pointed at the floor? Like Candy was honestly more worried about what Betty had to say rather than what she would do.
So Betty's there holding an axe and Candy's claiming that she wasn't worried about her safety at this point?
Right.
Okay.
So Candy stands up and she's like, Betty?
Yeah.
And Betty's just like, don't see him again. Like, clearly an order.
Yeah, and a threat, I would say, with the axe in hand.
Yeah, so Candy thinks about it for a minute. And she's like, you know, under the circumstances, I think I'll just bring Elisa home and drop her off right after Bible school.
That's probably for the best, yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
Now, Betty thought differently.
Oh, well, okay.
And her tone was a little harsh. And it's like, well, you're holding an axe.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, no, I don't want to see you anymore. Just keep Elisa and take her to the movie because I don't want to look at you again. Bring her home tomorrow.
Wow.
So Betty then lays the axe against the wall just inside the living room. And she walks past Candy into the middle of the living room. She's like, I'll get a towel. You get Elisa's suit off the washer. So Betty is just like ping, 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 ping.
Yeah, she is all over the place.
Yes.
I'm scared.
Same. So at this point, Candy just wants to get the fuck out of Betty's house.
Yeah.
And like, I want the fuck out of Betty's house, metaphorically.
Yeah. I'm like, oops, I don't belong here. Right. Bye.
And like Candy's feeling sick to her stomach.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So she just grabbed Elisa's swimsuit off the washer, but Betty pops up behind her, Babadook style.
Oh, God.
Like,
She's so like, she's gone fully unhinged.
Yes.
Betty. Okay.
She's like, hey, don't forget Elisa's peppermints. But now her tone's softer, more reassuring.
And somehow that's less reassuring.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah. It's like, I don't like how quickly you're changing back and forth.
No, it's like, pick a lane, Betty.
Literally.
Now, when Candy looked at Betty, Betty was staring at her, but her expression wasn't an angry one now. Betty's face was full of pain.
Okay.
Candy placed her hand on Betty's arm and just kind of apologized.
Yeah.
She was like, Betty, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, she's, I mean, I imagine you couldn't help but feel guilty. I mean, you're thinking, wow, here's this person literally breaking down and I've caused it.
Or at least I couldn't help but think that, probably.
Right, you know, she didn't cause it by herself, but she was a part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
It takes two.
Right. It does.
Now, all at once, Betty erupts into a fit of rage.
Now, that actually makes sense given the roller coaster that you've just explained that she was on. I was like, okay, well, this sounds like she's going to explode at any moment. So,
yeah.
I'm not surprised.
It only gets worse.
Oh, no.
Betty throws Candy's hand from her arm and shoves Candy backwards into the utility room. Betty grabs the axe and rushes toward Candy, but she's holding the axe like a weapon this time, diagonally across her chest.
So in a much more threatening stance.
Yes, and she's just screaming, "You can't have him. You can't have him. I'm going to have another baby, and you can't have him this time."
So,
yeah. She's like, I'm pregnant again, and he's mine.
Yeah.
And Candy's just like, hey, Betty, don't. Like, can you not? And the two women are just struggling over this axe.
Uh-huh.
And Betty literally is just like, I've got to kill you.
Just, she snapped.
Yeah.
Okay.
And now as the two women are fighting for control of the axe, the flat side of the blade smacks the side of Candy's head.
Oh, where the Band-Aid wouldn't stick because of the hair.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes. And Candy steps backward, and when she looks at Betty, Betty had the axe raised over her head to strike. Candy screams and jumps sideways into a cabinet, spilling books all over the floor.
Oh, gosh, so this is a scene.
Scene.
This is a dramatic Scorsese ending.
I told you why I was serving you this week.
I don't know why I'm gagging you. Bring it every week.
Exactly. Now, Betty missed, but the axe hit the floor, bounced once, and sliced a huge gash in Candy's toe.
The toe.
Ding, ding, ding. Now, just as it did, Candy grabbed the blade, wrapping her hand around it. Now she was angry.
Yeah.
Betty lost her balance during this continued, never-ending struggle for the axe. And Candy saw an opening. As Betty struggled to regain her balance, her body sort of facing away from Candy, Candy brought up the axe with both hands and brought the blade down on the back of Betty's head. I know. Stick with me. I promise it's worth it. After this first blow, you'd think it's done.
Yeah.
Betty starts to slump toward the floor. Candy runs toward the door to leave, thinking, okay, I can get away.
Yeah.
But Betty got up and ran after Candy, slamming Candy into the door. And Candy's just like, Betty, let me go, please.
Right, yeah.
And Betty just says, I can't.
More like you won't.
Precisely. So Candy grabbed the axe again, and this struggle, this dance continues. Candy knocked Betty over and tried to escape through the garage, but it was locked.
Oh my God.
So she pivots as Betty moved towards her and she's like, Betty, don't just let me go. I don't want him. I don't want him.
Yeah.
Like just making it clear. And this part's so creepy. Betty doesn't say anything for a minute. She just puts a finger to her lips and goes, shh. Yeah. Yeah.
That's horrifying.
Now,
this is some horror movie shit.
Yes. Now, Candy had no pity or remorse now. Mm-hmm. She just grabs the axe, raised it up, and brought it down with all of the adrenaline-fueled strength she could gather.
Well, yeah. At that point, you know, she's running around. She's in that fight or flight. She's probably got a lot of it.
So, to put it bluntly, she destroyed Betty out of pure anger over what Betty had done to her. Mm-hmm. Candy only stopped at the point of exhaustion. There were all in all 41 axe wounds, and only one of them was done post-mortem.
Wow.
Now, when it came to the trial,
yeah,
Candy would deny the thing she admitted under hypnosis.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, now, isn't that just handy, Candy?
Handy Candy. And the prosecution would confront her with her own words, and she would admit them all over again.
What?
She played it well, though, because she was intelligent and considered attractive. And she was basically using the I freaked out excuse.
Yeah, well.
Is fucking valid. Yeah. It's fucking valid when you listen to that story.
Right. If she's telling the truth and it was, you know, someone's coming at you with an axe. And then, you know, that buildup, like you say, you know, you're in that fight or flight mode, you know, that adrenaline. It kind of makes the whole 41 blows thing less suspicious in a self-defense scenario.
Precisely.
Right. Yeah. Like it's more believable because it's like, okay, yeah. And if she was in that fugue state for like over 24 hours following, you know, again, it makes sense. Exactly.
And the mostly female jury agreed.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. Candy's testimony ended on a Friday. The following Wednesday, the jury heard final arguments and reached a verdict the same afternoon.
Really?
Candy Montgomery was found not guilty.
Okay. Well, I honestly, normally I don't know. This one's tough.
Now,
You've got me speechless.
I am going to give you a hot take.
Uh-huh.
I am Lucille Bluth over here. If what came out under hypnosis is true, I will add a caveat.
Yeah.
I'm Lucille Bluth about it, and good for her.
Yeah, I mean,
no one should have to face a life in prison for surviving an attempt on their life.
No. Self-defense is always okay, in my opinion. If you're, like, if you're really, you know, if someone's really coming at you and they're going to murder you, you have no choice but to defend yourself, and you have a right to defend yourself. But it's unfortunate because her story, it could go either way.
And it can't be verified.
Right. And I'm stuck on the 41 blows, but I've already, you know, also.
But if you're stuck in this, oh, I can't let you go thing.
Exactly. Mm. I kind of have to let that go because it's all plausible.
It's all plausible.
You can't prove one way or another. So how can you charge them and sentence them?
And I think that's where the jury was at.
Yeah.
Now, I know what you're thinking. You're probably like, Emma, where is Candy Montgomery now?
That's exactly what I was thinking.
I know, because that's the question I had when I was done researching. Following Candy's charges being dismissed, her whereabouts have honestly been kind of shrouded in mystery. Which makes sense. You'd want to keep it low key.
Yeah.
Now, there have been reports that Candy and her family moved to Georgia. There have also been reports that during the move to Georgia, Candy and Pat got divorced allegedly. And it was also reported that Candy has worked as a mental health therapist for quite some time.
Excuse me, what now?
You heard me.
Come again for Big Fudge?
No, you heard that.
Wow.
And Candy also now goes by her maiden name, Wheeler.
Candy. I'm stuck on the fact that she can get a job as a mental health a mental health therapist, and I can't get a job at Target. What is going on in the world?
Bitch, preach. Now, as for Alan.
I was just going to ask about Alan.
Alan's whereabouts since Betty's death are unclear. But during the time between Betty's death and Candy's trial, Alan remarried.
Okay.
But even though he remarried, Alan lost custody of both of his daughters to Betty's parents, with whom he quickly became estranged. And literally not much else is known. And he's about 80 today.
Well, that was a wrinkle.
Yeah. Now, one last fun fact.
Yeah.
Just bear with me.
Where?
Out the window. But no, really, it's the last thing. So as I was researching this story and wrapping it up, I actually found out Hulu made a show about this case. I cannot wait to binge the fuck out of it. It's called Candy, and it comes out May 9th. And Jessica Biel is playing Candy Montgomery, and Melanie Lynskey is playing Betty Gore. Like, fuck me up. I randomly found this case, and then I randomly stumbled across the trailer for the show, and I'm so excited. Go watch the trailer, y'all. It's so good.
Yeah. I mean, don't watch it now. Wait until the episode's over.
Yeah, wait till you finish this episode, but watch it.
Yes, you're stuck. You're trapped. That was amazing. So thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Wow.
I'm so glad you liked it.
No, I loved it. It was one of the best stories ever.
Oh, you're too kind.
Maybe. No, I'm just kidding. Candy. Oh. I love the ones where I don't know how to feel at the end.
And I told you before we started recording that I was really taking you on a journey, and I meant it.
Yeah, a spiritual journey. And I think I've been through an awakening of sorts.
Yes, yes. That's what I want to hear.
I feel like we need a jingle or something for this part, because it's just like, it's always so hard for me to go into it.
I relate.
If there are any songwriters out there, just know that I am dying to hear what you think would be a good theme for us.
Send them in.
Please. I don't know anything about music.
No.
If you can't tell.
I mean, I played the saxophone in high school, but that doesn't count.
Well, it might. You want to, hey, give us some saxophone, like a saxophone and a hair of your hair.
I doubt I could still do it.
Anyway, have you heard about Einstein's brain?
So I'm gonna again remind you, this is the portion of the show where we talk about things that are unheard of. And I'm pretty sure just about everyone has heard of Einstein.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. Right. I should say specifically, have you heard about the theft of Einstein's brain?
Wait, like someone actually stole his physical brain.
That is correct. As crazy as it fucking sounds. Yeah. Some schmuck absolutely did steal Albert Einstein's brain.
First of all, why have we never heard of this?
Yeah.
Second of all, why on earth would you want to steal someone's brain? Like, is there a big market for buying people's brains on the black market or some shit?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sure there are people that do that. But luckily, that is not the direction of this particular story. That's not the direction we're going.
Oh, thank RuPaul, because I cannot handle that black market shit. Like, okay, there's strange shit, and then there's black market shit. Like, that shit is on a whole other level.
Girl, preach. Preach. And by the way, I love how many shits you were able to give us in that sentence. It's probably some kind of like world record.
Shit, 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 shit. There. Now I guarantee no one could beat that.
It's true. You know, hey, we really are making history here. More shits than any other podcast on the market.
Guaranteed, or your money back.
That's what we're known for.
Well, that and double entendres.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. You know, that reminds me. Did you hear about the Viagra shortage?
No.
Yeah. Apparently, customers are really upset about their pill shipments.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you see, they're not coming.
That was stupid. Is there an Oscar for stupidity?
Yeah, it's actually called the MTV Movie Award, but I will take one, so thank you.
L-O, fully L. You're ridiculous. Like, ridiculous.
It's the highest of compliments. We're ridiculous, and I think that really is our trademark at this point.
You know, I would say it kind of seems like our trademark is getting distracted from what we were talking about.
What were we talking about?
See?
I'm just kidding. Einstein's brain. Okay. So, Einstein's brain. A brain that I clearly do not have. Like, if Einstein's brain is like one of those, you know, those roller coasters that launches you from like 0 to 1 million in 2 seconds, I feel like I'm probably more like those antique cars that just kind of sputter and clunk around, like, you know, on the one single track at like 1/2 mile an hour.
Wait, how's it go again? Okay. No, I got it that time. Thanks.
No problem.
I feel like I'm a merry-go-round.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because my brain, it's just this infinite loop just spinning around and around, but like, it's not very exciting and no one's buying a ticket.
Oh my God. So Einstein's brain.
Oh yeah.
I know, right? So Einstein specifically did not, and this is important, Einstein did not want his brain to be studied after his death. And the reason behind that is because there's nothing that we can really glean from brains. And a lot of the science that compares brains, it's just all flawed. And he didn't want to have anything to do with it. But, like I said, it was stolen after Einstein's death in April of 1955.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
Kind of psychopath would steal a brain from a dead person that specifically asked not to have it taken.
Right. Like you hear it and you think, well, this probably has some black market deal, you know, some shady characters and probably in, you know, an Ocean's 11-esque heist moment and all of that.
Yeah, I really do.
Yeah. So the thing is, the person who stole Einstein's brain was actually none other than the guy that performed his autopsy.
What the fuck?
Yeah. So Dr. Thomas Harvey was a pathologist at Princeton University who was tasked with performing an autopsy on Albert Einstein. And with no one apparently to stop him, he literally cuts out Einstein's brain. He dissects it into 170 very thin slices of fucking brain matter. And then the man proceeds to fill up a bunch of like glass containers with formaldehyde to preserve the pieces of brain.
Pieces of Albert Einstein's brain that he just somehow walked off with.
That is correct. On a university campus.
Oh, sounds like they needed some serious security upgrades in Princeton.
Yeah, to me it sounds like, you know, they needed a SimpliSafe or something.
Oh my God. There you go again with SimpliSafe.
I didn't even mean to, but I do just want to say, I want a SimpliSafe so badly. Like, it would just make me feel so warm and cozy, like a weighted blanket, I imagine. And like, we have an apartment, so it would really just be the perfect solution for all of our problems.
Is this now an ad for SimpliSafe?
Legally and actually, no, because I can't say that. But I wish they were paying me to say this, because then maybe I could actually afford a freaking cock-a-doodie SimpliSafe.
Right, though.
For real. I mean, to be fair, they actually are reasonably priced. So it's like, if I weren't personally a poverty-stricken asshole, I would invest in a heartbeat. It's like, it's easy, it's cost effective, and, you know, it's so flexible of a system.
Okay.
That I know.
Okay. They're not going to send you a SimpliSafe.
I know. But a girl can dream, right?
Yes. We must keep the hope alive.
Exactly. Always. So back to Einstein's brain. Dr. Harvey, who stole his brain... Einstein's brain from the autopsy. He had sliced it into a bunch of pieces, took the pieces back to his house in jars of formaldehyde like a crazy person.
No, right? Super casual.
Yeah. Yeah. No big deal, right? So the craziest thing, honestly, is that he got away with it. And I guess no one noticed. And we're not talking about just for a short period of time either. No one noticed.
Okay. That doesn't inspire confidence in the whole, like, autopsy pathology process.
No, it really does not. And like I mentioned earlier, Einstein didn't even want his brain to be studied. So that's another level of violation. But apparently, again, no one cared because it was 43 years that Dr. Harvey was able to keep the pieces of Albert Einstein's brain in his house with no issue.
Are you fucking kidding me? That's crazy.
I know, right?
Honestly, I'd be so pissed. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I'd be dead, so I wouldn't care, but
your essence would be pissed from the beyond.
Exactly.
Right?
I'd be so betrivelled.
Yeah, and you'd have every right to feel that way. So this pathologist, Dr. Harvey, his plan was to study Einstein's brain, compare it to others, and hopefully learn if his brain was different from the average human brain. And he actually ended up cutting up the 170 pieces even further. And this is crazy. He even openly offered samples to people that walked up to him and asked. All you had to do was ask.
How were there people just walking up to this pathologist asking for pieces of Einstein's brain, though?
Right. Well, I guess word had started to get out, thanks to the rumor mill and, you know, Dr. Harvey himself. He really wanted other scientists to be able to study these samples as they wanted. He was interested in not just studying them, but letting other people study them.
Study the stolen brain.
Right. And speaking of, eventually, once word got out about Dr. Harvey storing Einstein's brain throughout his house, like he's freaking Jeffrey Dahmer or whatever, Einstein's family wasn't too thrilled about him going after their family's members, or, you know, going against their family members' wishes, you know? But they actually did agree to let researchers use the pieces of Einstein's brain as long as they promised to use the findings for publication only in scientific journals and that the anything discovered was not to be sensationalized. And I guess, like, you know, put in a Ripley's Museum, you know?
Are you talking about, like, fucking Ripley's Believe It or Not?
Yeah, like Ripley's Museums, you know?
Wait,
like
hold on.
In the
hold
Smokies.
On. They have museums?
Yeah.
What the fuck would they have at a Ripley's museum? Like, would it be like fucking shrunken heads and shit and livers and jars and a freaking geek?
They got a geek? I bet they got a geek. I've actually never been to one because, again, I'm poor as fuck. But I do know they have like aquariums and museums. And I think they have like little science and art and like, you know, fun fact exhibits and nothing too crazy, I don't think. But
once again, I find myself thanking RuPaul.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing that I think Einstein's family was worried about. Actually, his granddaughter, Evelyn Einstein, was notoriously outraged that Dr. Harvey took what definitely didn't belong to him.
And something that Einstein himself didn't want to be taken?
Exactly. It really is disrespectful. Now, Dr. Harvey responded by implying that it was simply his right to take the brain.
In what world?
Exactly. I guess, you know, in the name of science. But from all of his stealing of and researching Einstein's brain, nothing of note was found. Really. But like I said, that's how these brain studies go. There was nothing particularly abnormal or, what's the word?
Like irregular.
Notable.
Notable.
Yeah. Nothing noteworthy. Crazy. Yeah. Nothing noteworthy about Einstein's brain. Einstein himself knew that this would be pointless. And that was part of the reason he didn't want it studied in the first place.
Wow. Like, the level of disrespect.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's nuts. So after holding onto the brains and, well, occasionally giving little pieces away as like little gifts and trinkets, Dr. Harvey finally decided to give up the remaining portion of intact brain that he had to the University of Princeton. Yes, I said the part of the intact brain because he cut it up into 170 pieces, but he left a big chunk of it. So like these were like slices that he could put in a slide and then the rest of the brain was kept. So he just sliced off of like hundreds of pieces as needed.
You know, I was going to make dinner after we recorded and suddenly,
that's out the window.
Yeah.
Now I found this part kind of funny. After decades of hoarding the brain, Dr. Harvey had this to say about giving them away to the University of Princeton, who, by the way, still owns them to this day. He said, "Eventually, you get tired of the responsibility of having it."
Well, yeah, you shouldn't have had it in the first place, you dumb shit.
Right. He literally stole it. It was a theft, and no one did anything about it. It's insane. So anyway, Dr. Harvey died in 2007, and in 2010, his family donated everything Dr. Harvey had collected that he hadn't shared with anyone else. These included pictures, studies, and a whole bunch of brain pieces. And they donated it to the National Museum of Health and Medicine in Silver Springs, Maryland. Yeah. Fun fact, when I was a kid, I couldn't stop myself from pronouncing it Maryland. Like, I knew it was Maryland, right? But you know, like when you just can't process it, my brain couldn't process that it wasn't Maryland.
No, I love that so much. And it should be Maryland. It has a nice ring to it. And our cat would really love that.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Let's, you know, sign a petition to change it to Maryland.
Yes.
I'm sure it'll gain traction. So, yeah, that is the strange tale of the one time that Albert Einstein's brain was stolen from his lifeless corpse by his pathologist.
Thank you for that. That was stupid crazy. I love it. And I'm a little nauseous.
Oh, awesome. Thanks. That's what I'm here for, to bring you stupid, crazy, and to make you slightly nauseous.
I love it. Well, that is going to just about do it for what is easily our longest episode ever.
Yeah.
We hope you're enjoying us this week, weirdos.
Yes, and if you're still listening to us, we'd love to hear what you think. And we'd really like you to hit that like, subscribe, or follow button and go ahead and give us a nice review while you're at it. Hey, you know, it'll only take a second and we will literally never forget it.
Exactly. What have you got to lose? Mm-hmm. As always, please give us a follow on Insta at That Strange Podcast and on Twitter at That Strange Pod.
Feel free to send us a message at thatstrangepodcast@gmail.com. You always accepting ravens.
Don't forget about the ravens. And you can always send us a voice message by visiting our anchor page and clicking on message.
Yes, and on a quick note about that, we're taking the number out of the show notes because we've literally only received voicemails from people asking us to cancel their Scribbler.
It's so hilarious.
It really is. It's hilarious and annoying, and I've never heard of Scribbler.
Oh, but one man cussed us out. Oh my God,
we should play that for you. It was hilarious. He's like, I don't want my voice. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that all of these links can be found in the show notes as well.
And with that, this is The Strange Podcast. Once again, asking you to look after one another and be kind to each other. This episode is brought to you by the plentiful cries of Pangina Heels. Her salty, salty tears provide enough energy to power this show and then some. Legend has it that you can still hear her bitter wails haunting the studio to this day. If you're brave enough, the story goes that if you say blue hydrangea 3 times, the spirit of Pangina will savagely descend upon you and force you to rewatch her Snatch Game performance over and over, trapping you in a perpetual hell until the end of time.